Hello, this is Orville Radio. I'm Anika.
And I'm Isha. Welcome to Deepanam's monthly podcast. And our guest today is Gopa, a counseling psychologist.
She works in Matram with adults and youth of Orville. This is the third episode. We hope you enjoyed the previous ones.
So, since we know that you are a psychologist, what did you study to become one?
So basically after my graduation, which had no psychology in it, but I worked in human resources for a long time. And then where it was training people, so interacting with different kinds of people, that led me to study psychology. So I did my master's and then I also did counseling certification and did a couple of other certifications along with that.
So what is your experience when you like studied human resources and everything?
When I was working in human resources, what I experienced? So when I was working in corporate in Bombay, I realized that a lot of people were struggling with family, with financial issues or whatever. And that was causing them not to perform too well in their work. But when I actually sat with them and spoke with them, I realized that, it was helping them to just de-stress. Sometimes there was a lot of stress levels and people just didn't have the skills or a place, a safe space to share this. So that's what I discovered. Mm-hmm. And I felt that, I need to have the skill sets to help these people. So I needed to study. So I studied psychology to understand human behavior.
So, how now it's, really new to, study, go to, people and, talk about your problems.
Hmm.
So, how did people around in, Bombay, how did they,
did they support you?
Yeah,
How did they support
how
me?
How did they take it that you're a psychologist in this
community? Oh, that was in Bombay when I first discovered that I want to study this. I didn't even know it was a thing. I just knew that this is something that I was doing unknowingly, helping people. Then I discovered that there's something called counseling, and then I wanted to understand human behavior. So when I psychology is the study of human behavior.
Mm.
So then I said, okay, let me understand this, go into theories. So I did my master's, and then I was actually in the US, and then people would know that I'm a psychologist, and so people started coming to me. It was more like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was almost like changing my profession completely, and I decided to be in this mental health field. So that's how people got to know about me.
When did you choose to become a psychologist? How did you choose what you wanted to study?
So going back to that same incident, ever since I was a kid, I actually felt like people are comfortable coming and speaking with me. They come and share and talk. So something was innate within me to help people, to understand people. I actually wanted to be a teacher as a kid, and then I wanted to be a social worker by the time I was 14 or 15. People told me you can't earn money with that, you'll be poor. So I said, okay, I don't want to do that. I want to be in corporate life. So I pursued something else. Once I was in human resources, I started helping people, which I just shared. Then I got interested in psychology. So then I studied. And I came back in one big circle of helping people. So it was actually there with me since I was a very young girl to really talk and connect with people.
That's nice. Oh, when and why did you come to Orville? Why?
And how did you find out about Orville?
Oh, okay. Why did I come to Orville? That's an interesting question I ask myself even now. So I was in Singapore before leaving, before coming to Orville. And my neighbors, they were from the ashram, Sri Aurobindo Ashram. So there was a big influence in my life from them. And they told me about Orville.
Oh.
So there was a time when we were exploring to move out of Singapore and have an alternate life.
Mm-hmm.
As a family. So we were looking around. So we went to the Himalayas first, we went to Bali, and then we came to Orville. But we just loved Orville. And it was like that missing puzzle piece in my life. So it just fit. And that's why I'm here.
Why do you think that people need counseling?
Why do I think people need counseling? I think we all need help in that space, because just like we need physical exercise, physical fitness, we take care of our bodies, but what about the mind, right? And sometimes the stress levels are very high in life. So when it all adds up, there's a lot of anxiety, there's no place to share or talk. Sometimes we feel disconnected. So when we feel disconnected, we feel out of harmony, out of something is wrong, something is not quite fitting right. So what happens is, if we have a place to talk about these concerns, a place to share in a very safe space, non-judgmental way, it actually keeps us healthy, mentally healthy. So it's not that mental health has to come to a crisis state where, you know, you're depressed and anxious. It doesn't have to be like that. Actually, if we take care of ourselves by connecting regularly with our own emotions, with understanding there are some negative thoughts within us, and how we can actually talk well to ourselves, and that happens in counseling. So all this is what we address in counseling.
So, like how you said, people need like a non-judgmental space to like talk. How do you create that like safe space? Because some people, like, you know, they're not easily able to talk to people.
Very true. So it takes time. It's a bit of a relationship that we have to build. The first thing is to understand ourselves as therapists, because we have our own bias and prejudices, and, you know, something that I carry from my conditioning. So something that I might judge very easily. So first I have to understand that. So that I can create that space. So it takes a little time. When people come, we take interest in them. And that makes them feel accepted. And the questions are more for them. It's not so much about judging them. So, and it's a safe space. And if we have issues where we are not agreeing with the person, then it's important to acknowledge that for us as therapists, and say that maybe it's good to refer this person to somebody. So we are not expected to get along with everybody. It's not possible, humanly possible. So sometimes the person may not agree with me, or I may find it difficult. It's all right to refer that person to another therapist.
So, like, you work with youth and like adults, right? So it's probably different, like, engage with both, like kids and adults. So how is it different?
How is it different? Nice question. So kids, you know, with children, when I work with, they are part of a system, no? There's a family that the children are dependent on. So I don't just work with children alone. There could be teachers that are there in the child's life. There are parents involved. So I worked with them. I work with everyone, actually, as a system. I just don't work. So this child is not at fault if they're experiencing something and they're behaviorally acting out or something is happening. I will talk to everyone in the child's life. And then I really take interest in the child's life to let the child share what they are really experiencing. Adults, on the other hand, it may be just the adult I speak to. I will not talk to every person in that adult's life, you know. But two things are common in both. Confidentiality is something that we maintain for the adult and the child, until unless they will do some kind of harm to themselves or to somebody else. And then I can't keep that confidentiality. But otherwise, these two are very common in both youth and children.
So, like, you know, a lot of, like, patients? Clients. Like, they're actually coming to you, like, with a lot of, like, maybe trauma that they haven't been able to speak about, or they have, like, depression, anxiety sometimes. How do you cope with it? Like, because they tell you, right? So.
How do I deal with their... Oh, that's so nice and thoughtful of you. Sometimes there can be some very heartbreaking stories, you know, mm-hmm. of people's experiences and their lives, and it does impact us. So we do take help for us as well. So I work in a team. I have a very nice team here. It's called Matram. Mm-hmm. We are six of us here. And so we have something called intervision. Intervision, that means it's kind of a supervision that happens amongst each other, mm-hmm. but in a team. So we help each other.
Oh, so you talk about what you are feeling.
Yeah, sometimes we do express. Sometimes, you know, we have difficulties in some cases where we hit a roadblock and we need help of our peers, mm-hmm. or our colleagues. But in this case also, sometimes if something is very difficult, we do express and we share with each other, because we also need help.
Yeah.
What advice would you give for teenagers who are going to go to high school from middle school?
Ooh, wow. You guys are going to high school, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's super cool. What advice? Wow. Actually, as therapists, we're not supposed to give advice. You know that, right? Ideally, good therapists don't give advice. But, can I ask you that question? What do you think? What do you feel about, what are your worries?
I don't have any worries. It's like a different place.
Change. Like, all this time we were in this school and then suddenly we're going to high school, and it's like...
Yeah, and like people make it like, oh, high school.
Yeah.
High school. So you have certain impression of high school.
Yeah.
And what this... So what do you think the challenges are there?
I don't know. It's just new for me, at least. Like, it's a new place, you know, hard to... I don't know the word.
It's hard to connect with people because there'll be more new people over there,
I guess.
Or new teachers.
Yeah.
So it's unfamiliar.
Yeah.
It's unfamiliar. Okay. So that's something. So there's uncertainty in the in the new phase of your life. So it's obviously, it's a big transition, actually. So you've been in one school. It's kind of a little bit of a cocoon, no, with your teachers and your friends and everything, and now you're going into the big bad world of high school, where there are new teachers, and so it's going to be challenging in the sense that there are expectations, maybe, and how you handle yourself, how you're going to build friendships. So there are different aspects of your life that is going to be changing. One is the academics part. Mm-hmm. Which is going to get more intense, maybe, or focused into something specifically. It's all very exciting, but at the same time, very scary.
Yeah.
Right?
So, you know, like in high school, the academic stuff gets intense. Not always, but, like, you know, mostly. It just, like, gets to a higher level, let's say.
Yeah.
Then, you know, many teenagers are, like, they start getting anxiety, like, you know?
Hmm.
They don't feel like they're prepared for this. So how do you help them understand and, like, you know,
manage
their emotions and stuff?
When you, if you're having exams, and how do you deal with stress? Or how do you deal with failure?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So there are many things you're asking. So let me just look at with high school preparation for academics and exams. There's a lot of planning that needs to be done, and how to prioritize, you know, your tasks. The biggest issue is actually distraction. Teenagers face is distraction with social media and phone and things like that. That comes in the way of their study time. So I actually just help teenagers to see how they can prioritize their work and work in... you know, in small intensities, intense periods, like, say, 20 minutes, I will switch off my phone and I'm not going to look at it and I'm just going to finish this task. So those are some things that we can help. That's more like coaching, you know, this is more like coaching. The emotional parts are usually related to, am I going to fail?
Yeah.
So there are some belief systems that we all come under. You know, we always have some strong belief systems about ourselves, like who we are, what we can do or what we cannot do. And sometimes I just challenge those. I really help them to see in the past, were there any positives that you've done in this same thing? And they'll say all these. And I look into their resources. And when I say resources, their strengths. You know, what are their strengths that have helped them so far? And let's look at that rather than looking at some negatives. So there are some automatic negative thoughts. It's called ANTS. Have you heard of that?
No.
It's a short form, automatic. Uh-huh. Negative thoughts, oh. ANTS, it's ants. Called.
What's
so,
the S?
Thoughts, S.
Oh.
Or you can call it ant,
okay.
Thought. So, thoughts. So, these are very automatically embedded that, oh, I'm always a failure. Mm-hmm. Whatever I start, I can't complete.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not good enough. You know, there are people who are better than me. So these are automatic negative thoughts that are constantly playing in our mind. So, I help youth as well as adults,
mm-hmm.
to recognize these, and you know that is causing a lot of anxiety and stress. So these are the emotions that we look at, and when we challenge that,
mm-hmm.
we strengthen the positives in that, and every one of us have resources,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And sometimes we just need to work better. How do we do that? How do we get more smarter in the way we work? So those are the things that I think in high school is going to be very important.
So you said like you help teenagers, like you tell them their strengths and all that. But how do they know that they need to come and talk to you or, you know, like?
So that's a big challenge. In Oroville, there was no such thing as Matram before.
Mm-hmm.
There were many therapists, but they work independently. I came 5 years ago. 4.5 years
mm-hmm.
ago to Oroville. And so what I am offering was a little new.
Yeah.
So people don't really know. And it's not... So I have to create a bit of awareness about the work we do in Oroville and how we help. So, for instance, I work with Deepanam.
Mm-hmm.
So similarly, I work with IKM, I work with AHA. So as and when people get to know me,
mm-hmm.
so you know me, that's why you've invited me here today. So that's how people get to know me. So today, this podcast, many other people are going to listen and they're going to find out, oh, okay, there is mental health support in Oroville.
Yeah.
So they contact, and it's usually word of mouth,
mm-hmm.
you know, one person tells another person. And so youths, that's how they get to know, and they come and meet me in their own, in a confidential space, so others don't get to know about it.
So sometimes, you know how, let's say people, they need, their parents' consent sometimes, you know, to go and talk to, maybe counselor or someone, they need consent.
Hmm.
So, but, what do you do if, the family is like, yeah, no, you can't.
Okay.
Don't go to uncle. Because maybe
yeah,
the family is also new to it,
one.
You know.
But
yeah.
Then the person who might need it, maybe they have a problem with the family.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the family doesn't want them to go. So how do you think that they should?
Yeah, the family doesn't know. This is it's nothing bad. It just.
So is this a child really young, or are you saying a teenager? Say 13, 14.
10 to 18.
Okay, so if it's around 13, 14 years, usually consent is great because
mm-hmm.
that's what we would ideally want. And I would want to actually speak with the parents, what's the reservation that they're having against counseling? And I would like to. If they
mm-hmm.
just don't want to meet, it can be very, then it's
yeah.
difficult. But usually the references for such children would come. A child very rarely approaches us
mm-hmm.
that young, say 10 years.
Yeah.
But a 13, 14-year-old will get to know me, say, through a school
mm-hmm.
that I am attached to. Or they may also, it comes from the teachers, right?
Yeah.
That's how. And then I would encourage the parents to meet me with the teacher. That's
mm-hmm.
how I look at as children younger than, say, 12. But 13, 14 is different, you know. Children approach me, and if this is what they want, that they don't want the parent to know at all,
mm-hmm.
until unless there's a big problem,
yeah,
there is a problem, then I really need to inform some authorities or something. then of course I have to break my confidentiality. But most cases, I empower children to also have that voice, to share what's really, what is their difficulty in sharing. Usually, I will take them in confidence and work with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if they don't want the parents involved, I totally respect that.
Yeah. So, as I asked before, with exams, how do you deal with failure and also pressure from maybe
peers, maybe
parents, or someone just, or from teachers? How do you deal with pressure, and then how do you deal with failure?
How do you deal with failure and pressure from teachers as well as parents?
Yeah, or anyone,
or
just
like friends, people around, you know.
So,
basic society.
So give me an example. A person has failed in their exams. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, maybe. And then everybody's like, all their friends, maybe they passed like good grades, let's say. And they're like the only one in the group who failed, let's say.
Mm. And their parents are really angry with them?
Not always, but yeah, maybe.
Okay, maybe. So is this person willing to come for counseling? That's number one. And so let's assume that he's open, he or she is open to come and speak with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I would really look at what is that the person is experiencing at that moment.
Yeah.
What is the person, what is it, what is this experience of that they're right now feeling? That's one. Acknowledging that and empathizing with that space. And then I would really want to ask why they've come and what would they want? What are they looking for? And if there are unrealistic expectations of people.
Yeah.
So suppose the child says, you know, I was really unwell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I've been... So unwell can be many things. It can be physically, it can also be mentally.
Mm-hmm.
So I would want to see if the person is having anxiety, there is depression.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to understand what's happening that's causing that. So you work with the root of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
That why is that happening? So sometimes it could be family... problems within the family. Say some parents are having fights, or you know they are, you know, there's disharmony in their family. So I would like to then invite the parents and see how we can work on that, because that's impacting this child.
Yeah.
So it's very complex, but at the same time we want to make it as simple as possible. But usually you have to see everything in the child's life.
Yeah.
It's no point just focusing on the child's life and say, okay, you failed, now let's see. How are we going to now pass? No, that's not counseling, that's not therapy. It's here and now. We work with what the problem is right now, but we also look around what's happening in the child's life.
Yeah. So, like, do adults also have this problem? Like, not problem, maybe, but like, you know, how kids also nowadays are like coping with, like, not able to cope with pressure or anxiety. Do adults also? They probably do, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So anxiety, I want you to know, is actually normal in the sense that we all feel anxious,
mm-hmm.
okay? There's good anxiety and there's bad anxiety, okay? Good anxiety is that, oh, okay, I have a test tomorrow. I have to prepare. I have this interview. I have to, you know, whatever, you know, talk with you. So there's an anxiety there, right? Which is good anxiety. That's fine. But if there's an anxiety where I'm completely dysfunctional, I'm not able to move, I'm paralyzed, yeah? Or I'm having a panic attack. You know, like I can't breathe, and or just that I don't feel like doing anything. I just give up.
Mm-hmm.
The anxiety is so much, I won't even try. Have you felt that sometimes? That, you know, this is too hard, especially math problems sometimes, right? Like, you know, oh my God, you look at the number of words.
Like,
no, there's so many words in that math problem that, you know what? Oh my God, this is so anxiety provoking. I will just give up. Okay? So you can't even read the words. Now, those are things which is kind of bordering on bad anxiety, and that's making you nervous. So, parents also have it. Adults also have it. We all have it. And something that we have not looked into for a long time, an anxiety that's building, 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 then that becomes very dysfunctional. That's when it becomes a problem, right? Otherwise, we all experience anxiety. It's a state of life, actually, that we are supposed to face. And sometimes just working with it, just like your body, you know, if you have a physical problem, you need to treat it. Mm-hmm. Same way, this is also something that we treat and we can feel better.
Yeah.
So adults absolutely have it, just like kids.
Do you think that teenagers hesitate asking for help when they need help, and how do you think that you can help them?
Like, why do they hesitate to ask?
Yes, they do. They do. So, you know, teenagers developmentally is a very difficult time because mm-hmm. there's so many things happening. One is you're growing tall, your brain is maturing really quick, and there's so much activity in your brain. And not only that, in terms of your friendships, everything is shifting and changing every day. And the one of the biggest thing is that how are people judging you?
Mm-hmm.
That's one big thing that I'm sure you also experience it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're constantly wondering who is thinking what of you,
yeah.
right? And that's it's actually developmentally appropriate. You almost feel like everybody's eyes are on you. Like, are they're like looking at your clothes or, you know, how's your hair? So this is something very normal.
Mm-hmm.
And kids are afraid to reach out for help because they feel judged.
Mm-hmm.
This is the primary reason that teenagers don't want to get in touch with counseling. And it's difficult. They also feel that, you know, although they feel there's something wrong with them, when parents say that, oh, I think you should go for counseling.
Yeah.
That's like, no.
Yeah, that might also be something, you know.
Yeah. So they're also rebellious. They're also wanting to say no to people, you know, to defend themselves. Yeah. And that's also something that they're experiencing. So all this combined together, I think, and it feels scary, actually,
mm-hmm.
when they have to come to counseling. Have you ever experienced counseling, both of you? Would that be scary to go to a counselor? Just a question for you.
Maybe, kind of.
It would, because...
For me, generally because it's a new person.
New like, person.
Not like, you know.
I think maybe because I need to trust them.
Mm.
And I think it's a bit hard for me to trust more people.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. Yes, those are exactly what most teenagers, many times even adults are going through the same things. So just like teenagers don't want to come, there are plenty of adults who also don't want to come to counseling.
Yeah.
So it's something where sometimes it works and some people come, some people don't. That's how it works.
So like some time ago you said, like, if you're maybe talking to a kid, then you need to like, talk to everybody in their life, in some cases.
Sometimes, yes.
And in the case of like pressure and stuff, what if it's society pressure and not like family and friends? What if it's just society?
Yeah.
Then you can't really like, you know, change the whole society.
No, we can't. So, yes. That's the unfortunate part of the system today, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you want to... So I would really work with the individual to understand what's a realistic expectation of themselves. Why are we succumbing to that pressure? What is going on underneath?
Mm.
So really understanding the self first, you know, and really seeing a realistic goal, sometimes pressures are built because there are unrealistic expectations of oneself.
Mm.
So I would really try to assess the expectations and see what's going on and what do they really want to do? Is it for somebody else
mm-hmm.
or do they really want to do it for themselves?
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes we are lost. And sometimes it's a confidence issue. So it's a self-esteem that needs to be worked on. So as I said, I mean, everything you're asking me, there will be many spokes to it, you know. It's not one single answer, but I have to explore and look at the individual's life.
What do you wish that was more known or people were more aware of?
Mental health
issues or something that you see many people are having it, but then many people don't know about it, so they can't
really share. Aware, so then so if someone says it, then they're like, oh no, what is this? Is something new or not, you know?
Yeah.
How do you?
So number one thing is that mental health is a big taboo.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah. Although in the last few years, I've seen there's a lot of awareness, mental health campaigns and, you know, social media, big celebrities talking about it. While all that is fantastic, there's still a massive taboo, not only in India, but even in the West,
yeah.
that we... the minute we know that somebody feels vulnerable and they share about their mental health, they immediately boxed and, you know, they say, oh, this person has this.
Mm-hmm.
Firstly, labels are very dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, so-and-so has this, so-and-so has that.
Mm-hmm.
These can be very, very hurtful for individual lives. And it's not great for mental health, actually. So I feel this is something that can... you know, how do we, I wish it wasn't there actually.
Yeah.
You asked what would I think would should help, right? One is also the taboo part of it. I wish it was lesser.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that people think that only if, you know, I'm in depression or my anxiety is so bad that I need a counselor or a psychologist. But the truth is, we all need to speak about transitions, challenges, and sometimes if it's difficult to just come and speak about it and in a healthy way where you feel safe. So that's why Matram, we believe it's a community psychology that we would like to practice where it's open to everyone. And we have something called open consultation hours every day between 9 and 10. Okay, with different therapists where all six of us are available. And you can just walk in. You can come and share anything. Like, I'm having exam pressure. I'm really nervous about tomorrow's exam and I want to come and talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or I'm having this problem with my girlfriend and, you know, she doesn't blah, blah, blah. I'm nervous she's going to break up with me. Okay. So these are not massive mental health issues, no? These are regular, anybody can face at any point in time. So I wish that this would be there. There should be more awareness about taking care of our mental health, just like we take care of our bodies.
Yeah.
So this is what I want.
So, do you have any, tips, that not only teenagers, but, everybody can use for, day-to-day anxiety, maybe, on a daily basis, you know?
Deep breathing, 100%, to assess, check in with your emotions, you know? What are you experiencing right now? Most of the time, we can't even name the emotion that we're experiencing. We'll find it very difficult to talk about, you know, to say, am I really frustrated? Am I sad? What am I feeling? So to check in with that. Also observe some very rigid thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't do this. They don't like me. You know, there are some, you know, conclusive thoughts that we have, and to have the ability to challenge them and to see that, okay, is this a belief system? Is it true?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And as I shared with you, ants, automatic negative thoughts, very, very important. How do we talk to ourselves? Are we nice to ourselves?
Depends on the mood, I guess.
Okay.
Depends what happened previous day or the... You know?
Yeah, it depends on the... But if something difficult happens,
mm-hmm.
how do we talk to ourselves? Have you observed yourself sometimes? Do we... We're not very nice to ourselves, you know? So I always ask the person, how would you speak to your friend about it? Would you say the same mean things that you say? Like, you know, I'm so dumb, I'm so stupid, why did I do this, you know? We say that, no, to ourselves. What an idiot, you know? Why did I do this? But you won't tell that to your friend, would you?
No.
If they made a mistake, hey, you'll say, hey, it's okay. Right?
Yeah.
Right? So how do we talk to ourselves? So our what we call as internal dialogue.
Yeah.
What is our own voice in ourselves? How are we speaking to ourselves? So these are some tips that I definitely would. But deep breathing is an amazing way to take care of our anxiety. Anytime you are experiencing anxiety, there's a way to de-stress. One is you count four times in, mm-hmm. deep breath in, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then breathe out longer, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Or there's a blowing thing, like you take deep breath in, you blow the candle out.
Mm-hmm, yeah. There's also the 4, 7, 8 method.
Yes, absolutely. So how do you practice that when something is really bothering you?
Mm-hmm.
Because then that calms you down, and then ask yourself, okay, what am I feeling? And then observe the ants or how you're talking to yourself. Are you being really hard on yourself?
Mm-hmm.
What are your expectations? Are they real? Are they, manageable?
Yeah.
So those are some things that I would say.
How do you deal with self-esteem? Some people have more self-esteem, but sometimes that can lead to ego.
Mm-hmm.
But some people have low self-esteem. So that's also not good. So
yeah.
How do you learn how to moderate it?
Wow. Such amazing questions. Wow. I love it. So one is that, self-esteem is interesting because it can also show up as somebody saying to hide it that they have low self-esteem. They can pretend that they can do everything well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? To kind of compensate for that feeling that I'm not good enough. So they may really try to work very hard and show that they're perfect or they do everything well. And if you show them one tiny mistake in what they do, they'll get very angry.
They'll deny it. Yeah.
Yes. So that means they're actually suffering internally. You know, it's really hard. They feel that they're really working hard to make sure that they don't make any mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So your question is basically, how do you work with self-esteem?
Mm-hmm.
To draw a balance? Is that what you, because sometimes we have low and sometimes, so actually there's no one in this world who's going to have high self-esteem all their lives, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sometimes or the other, we do feel low about ourselves.
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that human? That we are just going to feel sometimes that we're not good enough. And it's okay. But how do we embrace ourselves is the most important question. When things are just, you feel like a failure, for instance. But if you, but the truth is that are you a failure every day, every moment of your life?
Mm-hmm.
That's a question I would ask, right? Or are you, you have this negative self-belief that, you know, I'm always a failure.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean. Those are automatic negative thoughts, and I would challenge that. So working on those, because all of us are blessed with resources.
Yeah.
We all have something within ourselves to fight and do better and to encourage ourselves. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So I would actually tap into all those resources within ourselves. What is there that can work for me positively? How do I work with that? Right? So that's, self-esteem is something that we constantly work, but not to always say that one incident happens, therefore I can't do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then it comes up slowly. Remind yourself of all the good times that you were able to succeed.
Yeah. And what about when you have high self-esteem, so that it doesn't lead to ego?
That means they will have some relationship issues maybe? How do you see that?
No,
when somebody has a high...
Sometimes I experience it that when I do something well and then people compliment me and then I feel very like ego.
High ego.
Yeah.
So is that wrong?
I don't know. Sometimes, I don't know. No. Maybe it's wrong.
And then next time if you try to do it, you're like, oh yeah, this time I'll be able to do it really good, like, because last time I was able to do it
really
nicely.
So overconfidence.
Like, no, but then the next time it goes like really bad, let's say, and then your like confidence just goes down like zero.
Maybe
and the next time you don't want to try it again.
Pressure, that's what I'm trying to say, yes.
Maybe the pressure from the previous time that you were really good, maybe, and then next time you do it, then
you have to live it up.
Expect you,
Yeah. So that anxiety.
People will also say like, oh, you did it so well last time, why
not this time? What was wrong?
What happened? Something.
So I would ask you that question, that are you, can somebody constantly perform?
I mean, no.
No. So if there is something that goes, if you're relaxed, most likely you will perform beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But if you're anxious about the performance,
mm-hmm.
then it might just be a little shaky.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the only thing. Other than that, we just have to work with that. Yeah.
We have now come to the end of the podcast. Thank you for listening and
thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.